prepared a 15-minute talk, will not get much of an opportunity to deliver it. Does anyone have any questions? If not, we're ready to proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Darrell Campbell. I appear today on behalf of the appellants, John and Janie Person. The matter that comes before the court for review concerns the Elbert County District Court's decision to reject tendered instructions that were proposed by the plaintiff concerning its negligence and negligent misrepresentation claims that were asserted against their insurance agent, the defendant, Mr. Weller. From our standpoint, the disputed jury instructions can be grouped into two general categories. The first one concerns the application of the Colorado Jury Instructions Civil Chapter 19 relating to fraudulent misrepresentations, and particularly the duty of disclosure to avoid creating a false impression of the true facts in the mind of another during the course of a business transaction. The second category of instructions deals with the expanded scope of duty required of anyone, including licensed professionals such as insurance agents, who voluntarily assume responsibility for services beyond that normally required of a person in those circumstances. We believe that from the appellant's standpoint that the standard of care is applicable to the defendant is an integral part of the jury instructions, that the trial court in this case, the failure to define the scope of the duty that was required of the defendant with respect to these claims constitutes an abuse of discretion. It cannot be considered harmless error. That instead, it's reversible error requiring a new trial because the results of the trial may well have been different had the jury been charged with the proper standard of care, the higher burden of proof, higher standard of care.
You didn't bring a fraud claim, did you, sir?
Did I what?
You didn't bring a fraud claim.
No, I didn't. No, you're right.
So how are the instructions relative to fraud appropriate?
Well, and I think that's a good question because that's what the judge struggled with. The trial court struggled with the idea that we didn't allege intentional. And so based upon his view that intentional only applies to fraudulent misrepresentations, that the duties and the other issues relating to disclosure and misrepresentation didn't apply. I would suggest that the key, from our standpoint, is found in CGI 9-4, which is the elements instruction. If you compare the elements instruction with the instructions for fraud by deceit, the principal difference is the scienter element, obviously. From the standpoint of fraud, you have to show that they knew that the misrepresentation was false, or that he was aware and knew that the representation, that he knew he wasn't true or false, but he made the statement anyway. That's for fraud. And then, obviously, for negligent misrepresentation, it's negligence. The key, the point that I think has to be dealt with, is the notes on use for CGI 9-4. Because the court in that, the notes on use saying this is, it says use this instead of 19-1, which is the fraud elements, misrepresentation. But then it says, in the case where a defendant has an honest belief in the truth of what he represented, and the defendant was negligent in arriving at that conclusion, or was negligent in the manner that the defendant communicated, thus creating a false impression of the true facts in the mind of the plaintiff. And I suggest to the court that that second aspect of negligent misrepresentation is what the instructions under Chapter 19 deal with. And it's from our standpoint that that duty of care applies regardless of whether the representation was made by the defendant in the context of intentionally or recklessly or whatever, that the duty of care is to be based upon an objective standard, and it applies whether it's negligent or not. And it's the idea that from the standard of care is designed to give an objective standard so people in a business transaction don't have to, and I guess this is the concern I have with the way the court dealt with it. The objective standard is now the person who's the recipient of that misrepresentation has to make a determination at that time whether, in fact, the other person is intentionally fraudulently trying to misrepresent something, or whether it's negligent, because as the court now has instructed and ruled in our case, if it's negligent, then the defendant doesn't have, the plaintiff doesn't have the right to rely, and he doesn't have the typical duty of disclosure that he can anticipate from the other party in the context of misrepresentation, the right of justified reliance. And that's where, as we go through this, the court, I believe, made the error in the case, because the jury was left with two instructions. The jury was, you know, a jury is just normal people coming in and making their decision. And the idea that the court has to define the duty, and the court did, nobody denies this, he gave the instruction of what negligence it is. It's not using reasonable care under the circumstances. And then there was one other instruction, and that was the professional negligence, where he indicated that if you don't have a special relationship between the parties, the jury was advised that the defendant has no affirmative duty to advise or warn his customer of provisions contained in an insurance policy. That was where the jury was left.
And let me ask a question. You want to introduce the rubric of fraud into the case through the instructions. And my question is, it seems to me what he did, if he defrauded your client, he defrauded them into canceling insurance with him and buying it from somebody else. Where's the motive for this?
I don't believe there has to be a motive for
him. I don't believe there has to be a motive. There's no benefit here for him. Matter of fact, it's just the opposite. Well, he's telling them to accept somebody else's policy rather than his, because the other policy fully insures the barn.
Well, that gets to the issue of what is fraud by deceit. Is it the common version of what somebody would say, that they have to intentionally plan out a scheme to defraud somebody, or under the circumstances, says he knew the representation was false, and he knew that they were going to rely upon it, and that's why I think...
And you're, I didn't mean that, but you're referring to the notes on use, right, when you're using this language.
The notes on use, but what I'm quoting is the elements of fraud. Okay. They're talking the third and fourth elements, talk about that they knew the representation was false, or they were aware that the representation was not true or false, and they still made it. That's the context, especially in September 2005, when she, Mrs. Person, gave him the information, asked him to review the two policies. And he knew at that point she was going to rely upon it. And he had a decision at that point. He didn't have to review those policies, but he assumed the duty of reviewing those policies. At least that's what they anticipated what he was doing. And then he then calls her back and says, you've got double coverage. And the testimony also indicated that there was better coverage with the other policy. So in that context, whether he's going to derive some benefit or not, he knows that somebody's going to rely on it. And that's what the standard care.
He also has to know it's false.
I didn't hear that.
He also has to know that the advice is false, does he not?
He has to understand at the time he didn't have the information to make that decision, and that's what he didn't. He acknowledged his own testimony. He couldn't make that decision without having information, the policy itself. But he didn't tell the clients that. He comes to the conclusion, says, oh, you got double coverage. In fact, it's better. And then the plaintiffs in this case, looking at a declaration, shows the barn being insured for $390,000 on the new one, and he never mentions, well, when I originally got the insurance, I only put it for $98,000 because I did it for actual value, and I didn't have a chance to do replacement because our insurance company didn't do that, and I didn't go get an appraisal because I didn't think I needed it. I did my own appraisal. All that should have been brought out at the time. That's why we brought in the context of negligent misrepresentation. But the duty is to speak truthfully, and that to tell us all the facts. And that comes out of the restatement, too. And that's what we're using, Section 551 and 552, where it talks about there's an obligation that the parties have a right to rely upon and expect the other party to communicate information that is true, consistent with the facts, which is false information in the context of negligent misrepresentation, which is false representation in the context of fraud, the definition that we asked.
Mr. Campbell, let me ask you this. Okay, this is a negligence case.
Yes.
And you're talking about whether the reliance is justified or not. If this were a fraud case, then one of the elements is that the jury would find that the plaintiffs are justified in their reliance. And it seems to me what you're arguing is you wanted the jury instructed that plaintiffs here were justified in their reliance, but that's not an element in negligent misrepresentation.
But there are Colorado cases that say that reliance is an element of negligent misrepresentation and fraudulent representation.
Reliance is, but are they justified in their reliance? And I think what it goes back to is, in a fraud case, the defendant has a greater responsibility for his consequences in not being honest and in relaying false information. Whereas in a negligence case, this is where a defendant is merely being negligent, and so you don't have that added requirement that the plaintiffs are justified in their reliance. They may have relied on it to their detriment, but I think what you're arguing for is that the jury be instructed to have found their reliance was justified, and then that goes to the issue of comparative negligence.
That's exactly what the justification, whether you use the word justification, whatever, the jury wasn't aware that they had the right to be assumed that somebody would tell them, give them statements that were consistent with the facts. They would tell them important information that was not disclosed to avoid misleading them to coming up with a false impression of what the true facts were. And that's what this case is about. And from the standpoint of whether it's negligence or intentional conduct in this case would be falling below the standard of negligence. Because reasonably, I don't believe that you could be intentionally defrauding somebody. You're still following the original standard of care, and based upon that, that's why we believe we're entitled to those instructions, because there was evidence that he knew about this from the testimony. He made these representations anyway, they relied upon it, and they had the damages. And
what difference does it make if you won on the negligent misrepresentation claim? You don't have comparative negligence? Is that the difference?
Well, from the standpoint of a new trial, the result may have been different from the standpoint of allocating the responsibility between the parties and the measure of damages, because they didn't hear about the assumed duties that he took on and he didn't have to. They had the one instruction he didn't have to warn. And I apologize. I would like to reserve the rest of it for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Paul Cooper, Supreme Court number 1648. On behalf of defendant, and I believe you're aware that I did not try the case, so I apologize if I get something incorrect, but essentially my understanding is this was a suit for professional negligence, and as is the practice in those kinds of cases, the experts have to provide the additional explanation for the what is reasonable care for an expert in that field of practice, and that was done in this case, and the plaintiff prevailed. So it seems to me that this is in other words, the complaints by plaintiff about the jury not having enough information, number one, I disagree, but number two, I think reasonable care was defined and the experts then gave it more content and the jury weighed those and made the decision. Normally, negligent misrepresentation is, as Your Honor pointed out, a much easier thing to prove with less elements and less required than fraud. And here there was no effort to prove fraud or allege fraud, and yet in that context, to give those instructions, I think, would have misled and confused the jury rather than helped.
Did you need an expert in a fraud case? If they were alleging a fraud claim, would they have needed an expert here?
It wouldn't have been required necessarily, I don't think, unless they also had a professional liability claim. But I think the requirement of an expert and a dismissal under Melville versus Southward and that line of cases is only in professional liability cases. The other argument about the voluntarily assumed duties, my understanding, the general rule in professional liability cases, if there is a special duty assumed, there has to be also proof of consideration for the assumption of that duty, and I don't see any evidence in this case that that was part of the proof or allegations. And the law imposes the duty of reasonable care. That's what it is, and that's what the jury was instructed on and what they decided. So unless there are more questions, I don't have any further statements. It was a professional relationship and a long-term one, and the jury evaluated that. So
thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Up a little soon, but you're up.
Please, the court, I'm back. Counsel does point out it was a professional negligence. I guess the Blaskas case is the one that we cite in the brief, and I think it is pertinent because that was the same argument that was made in Blaskas with the physician that said, well, hey, I complied with this implied consent. There's no basis for a negligent misrepresentation. The court said you can be held liable for negligent misrepresentation if you volunteer or make statements in that would have any a normal common law responsibility. And I guess that's the issue. Is an insurance agent exempt from the common law duties? And I guess that's the
well, the common law duty for informed consent is not fraud.
No.
I mean, there's no allegation of fraud. There's just an allegation, perhaps, that the doctor made representations that were not true or not correct.
Well, I didn't mean to tie it into that case. I apologize. What I'm talking about is from the standpoint that in the context of fraud and misrepresentation, are professionals exempt from all the responsibilities that you and I or any other person in the community, in the public, would have responsibility for in a business transaction? And that the restatement that goes along with it makes it clear. We've cited cases in other states because we haven't found any Colorado cases on point. There are cases that has one of the cases, but I didn't cite it. The Court of Appeals said that we assume but declined to decide at this point that negligent misrepresentation can come from negligent non-disclosure. And that's the issue before the court is the common law duties that anyone else in a business transaction would have an obligation to tell the entire scope of their knowledge, the information they had that was material to somebody on the other side making a decision, or is the insurance agent, because he's a licensed professional, doesn't have that obligation. Had this not been an insurance agent, it would clearly they'd have an obligation under the common law to. The cases are all in fraud, but that's the context of misrepresentation, is that there's a false impression. And then when you look at the jury instructions and the case law that talks about non-disclosure, that can be the conduct. It's a combination of conduct and statements, and that's what really what this case was all about. The ball was hidden about what was going on. They've been doing this for 15 years. It caught up because there was a barn that wasn't covered. Even if it had been under the NFP policy, there wasn't near enough coverage to do this. The clients were not advised of what was going on. There was consideration. He was getting premiums every year. He was getting his royalties off of this for 15 years. And yet the clients now in this situation are now deemed to be negligent because they relied. And I did want to thank
you. So what statement did he make that was wrong, that he knew was wrong?
He knew that he didn't have the information to compare those two policies. He knew at that point, and he said that the other one provided better coverage, and he said there was double coverage. And finally, before I finish, There was one question about justified.
You don't question about what he believed at the time he said it.
No, no, that, yes, there is. He knew at the time he didn't do it. He testified.
He knew at the time he could have inquired further, but that's different. Isn't it?
He knew that.
Then knowing that the statement he just made was false?
Well, it was a basic policy, and it wasn't broad. And there is a statement that he wrote the.
Okay.
I mean the red lights.
Okay. Well, you can finish what you're saying.
There is a voicemail that was left by him two or three days after the barn collapse, where he acknowledges that when he looks at it, that was basic, and he realizes he didn't have the information. He realizes that he says we don't supply basic. We do broad coverage. It would have been covered under our policy. And the final question, as you indicated, justified reliance. Boyd versus A.O. Smith, where it says in a number of Colorado cases, the Court of Appeals has indicated that justified reliance is an element of plaintiff's negligent misrepresentation. And based upon that, that's why I think these instructions, because the jury can't, I think the court is supposed to define the scope. And if you
isn't reliance the link between the act and the damages?
It is the causal link.
I mean, it's what gets you from the mistake or the fraud to the damages. You had to reasonably rely.
That's correct. And the cases we've cited say that the duty to disclose is part of that justified reliance. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir. We thank both counsel. We thank you for your arguments and your briefs. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course. The court will be in recess, subject to call, and the bailiff may so announce.
All right. The court will be in recess, subject to call.
Nice to meet you.